चलो कृष्ण, विल जस्ट स्टार्ट विद दिस भजन बाय श्री नारदम दास ठाकुर. सो आई विल सिंग, यू कैन फॉलो. धन मोरा नित्यानंदा, पति मोरा गौर चंद्रा, धन मोरा नित्यानंदा, पति मोरा गौर चंद्रा, प्राण मोरा युगल किशोरा,
प्राण मोरा युगल किशोरा,
अद्वैत आचार्य बाला, गदाधर मोर कुला,
अद्वैत आचार्य बाला, गदाधर मोर कुला,
नारा हरि विलासे मोरा,
नारा हरि विलासे
वैष्णवेर पाद दूली, ताहे मोर स्नान केली,
वैष्णवेर पाद दूली, ताहे मोर स्नान केली,
तर्पण मोरा वैष्णवेर नामा,
तर्पण मोरा
विचार करिया माने, भक्ति रस स्वदाने,
विचार करिया माने, भक्ति रस स्वदाने,
मध्यस्थ श्री भागवत पुराणा,
मध्यस्थ श्री भागवत पुराणा,
वैष्णवेर उच्चिष्टा, ताहे मोर मन निष्ठा,
वैष्णवेर उच्चिष्टा,
वैष्णवेरा नामेते उल्लास,
वैष्णवेरा नामेते उल्लास,
वृंदावन चबूतरा, ताहे मोर मन घेरा,
वृंदावन चबूतरा, मोर मन घेरा,
तोहे दीना नरोत्तम दासा,
तोहे दीना नरोत्तम दासा,
धन मोर नित्यानंदा, पति मोर गौर चंद्रा,
धन मोर नित्यानंदा, पति मोर गौर चंद्रा,
प्राण मोर युगल किशोरा,
प्राण मोर युगल किशोरा,
Hare Krishna. So this is a very nice bhajan composed by Shri Narottam Das Thakur, and this bhajan has some connection with the course that we are going to do today. We are going to start today. So Narottam Das Thakur basically emphasizes in this bhajan the mood of Vaishnava association. What does it mean to be in the association of Vaishnavas? So he says, Dhanamora Nityananda, Pati Mora Gaurachandra. He says, my treasure is Lord Nityananda and my master is Lord Gaurachandra. Pranamora Yugala Kishore. So basically this bhajan is talking about the value system of a devotee. What does a devotee value? So he values others, other devotees, association, all his relatives, friends, and people whose association he values are all devotees. His most cherished treasure is devotees association. So Dhanamora Nityananda, Patimora Gaurachandra, Pranamora Yugala Kishore, and my life and soul is the divine couple Radha and Krishna. Advaita Acharya Bala, I derive my strength from Advaita Acharya. Gadadara Mora Kula, and my family is Gadadhar Pandit. Narahari Vilasei Mora, and Narahari Sarkar is my very activity. Vaishnavera Padadoli Tahe Mora Snanakeli. I take my bath with the dust from the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. Tarpan Mora Vaishnavera Naam. And my satisfaction is in hearing and speaking the names of the Vaishnavas. Then he says, how do I spend my time? He says, Vichara Koriya Mane Bhakti Rasa Aswadane. My contemplation time is spent relishing the nectar of devotion. So, and what is nectar of devotion? Madhyastha Shri Bhagavata Puran, highlighted by periodic quotations from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, that is the nature of this book. So, in this book, Srila Rupa Goswami has composed this book as Science of Devotion, you can say. At least that's the first part which we will be discussing. And subsequent, the main part, the main chunk, two-thirds of this book is about the science of spiritual emotions, Bhakti Rasa. And all that is, all this science is established by periodic quotations from Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the nature of this book. The proof for all this subject matter that he is going to explain is actually from Srimad Bhagavatam. And Vaishnava's time, like Narottam Das Thakur says, my contemplation time is spent in relishing the nectar of devotion, which is highlighted by periodic quotations from Srimad Bhagavatam. Then he says, Vaishnavera Uchishta Tahemora Mananishta Vaishnavera Namete Ullas. Vaishnavera Uchishta, the remnants of the Vaishnavas, Tahemora Mananishta. I am always contemplating on how I can get the remnants of Vaishnavas. Vaishnavera Namete Ullas. And I blossom with joy at the remembrance of the Vaishnavas' names. Then he says, Vrindavane Chabutara Tahemora Managhera. My mind simply surrounds the platform on which Rasalila is conducted in Vrindavan. Kohe Dina Narottama Das. Thus speaks the lowly Narottam Das. So, of course, I just wanted to focus on this second paragraph where this exact point is mentioned by Narottam Das Thakur, where he is indicating that how he spends his time relishing the nectar of devotion, which is highlighted by periodic quotations from Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. So, with this auspicious bhajan, we will start the discussion today. But before we start, as we did for the previous course, I would like to just know, because this being the first day of the course, I just would like to know, at least some of you can share if you feel inspired, why did you register for the course and what exactly is your expectation, because you all are taking out your valuable time and it's going to be, you know, at least 4 months. And this will not even be the full 19 chapters. This is just, we'll be covering till Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And then subsequently we will, for those interested, we will also discuss about Raganuga Sadhana, at least the basics of Raganuga Sadhana, what is Bhava Bhakti, Prema Bhakti, what is Rasa. So those topics will be a different course in itself. But I would like to know, when you registered, what did you have in mind? What is your what was your expectation when you registered the course? What are you expecting? So that I can, if a whole majority of you have a completely different expectation, then maybe I'll have to change what I have in mind and maybe cater accordingly. So can you? If you feel inspired, not everyone needs to share, but at least some of you, if you can share what you had in mind when you, there's one chair. Anyone would like to share? Yes, Prabhu. More so I wanted to know, because we had written that Bhakti Shastri is a prerequisite. So, and we are discussing a Bhakti Shastri book. So that's another reason why I wanted to know why you registered for the course.
So Bhakti Shastri is done like a chapter book. And I wanted to understand this in more of the Rasa Bhava, you know, in a deeper understanding. Maybe I thought I was going to be covered in a deeper way. Then we did study the first 90 chapters, but more for academically passing the class, writing the exam. So the focus was more on understanding and writing it rather than relation. So I thought with the experience of having done Hela Chintamani with you, I thought we will do it in a more in-depth,
leisurely
fashion and understand this
topic. Anyone else would like to share?
Probably I thought by joining this class, I would maybe slightly reawaken my love for Krishna.
Reawaken your love for Krishna, okay. I mean, at least that I cannot promise, but...
We can try.
But at least, we can at least try to understand what we are currently practicing is what has been recommended by Srila Rupa Goswami. At least that much we can try to understand. What exactly is the path that has been paved by our acharyas? Are we on track or not? That much. And if we are on track, then eventually we can if not at the end of the course, but eventually at least we will be in the direction, and maybe down the line sometime we will definitely reawaken.
Yes, that's our goal.
Ultimately, yeah. Anyone else? Yes, Nitin.
Understand the process more. You have to the shop, the process. Most of them, because you are in the industry, because you have gone through the different studies of the scriptures in there. So, it's coming from your side.
Okay, I mean, we are just going to see whatever is presented here. I'll also tell you the nature of the course in a short while, but after we hear from one or two more devotees, if you would like to share. Because you all have taken time out for you, you know, it has been advertised that it's going to be a 4-month course, and for those of you who attended the first course, you know that it's just to, you know, because if I say it's an 8-month course or a 6-month course, no one would register. So 4 months, and then let's start, and depending on how it goes, you know, how devotees participate, it can go from anywhere between 4 months to 6 months. Hopefully, let's see. Okay. So, what we are actually going to do, which might be slightly different from the Bhakti Shastri syllabus, is that we will be doing this course verse by verse, as it was written by Rupa Goswami, so that we understand the context of many statements which were presented by Prabhupada in his Nectar of Devotion. And also along with that, we will also discuss commentaries by the original commentary for Bhaktirasama Sindhu was written by Srila Jiva Goswami. And subsequently, practically every generation acharyas wrote commentaries on Bhaktirasama Sindhu. This you can say is like our Bible, Gaudiya Vaishnav Bible, you can say is Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu. Practically every acharya who wrote a book in the next generation, all the books were written based on Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu only. Writings of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, I mean all the Gaudiya writings. I'm not talking about Bhagavad Gita and such literatures, but all the Gaudiya writings were all based on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu only. This was a monumental work done by Srila Rupa Goswami. It took him 17 years to compile this book. For someone of his caliber, and throughout those 17 years, he was assisted by Jiva Goswami. So Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami together took 17 years to compile this book. So which means it must have been, you know, lot of work has gone into this. And that's why, I'll try to explain to you the nature of this book. How many of you are from science background? Okay, at least some of you. Okay, so if you have to, or you can relate to it even if you are from a law background or something like that. If you, let's say if you are in your master's, if you are doing your master's or PhD, and you are given some journal papers to study, you know, which are related to your research work, let's say. And when can you understand those journal papers? What is a prerequisite? What is a qualification to understand the contents of the journal? when we are thorough with the subjects, when you know the textbook knowledge, 11th standard, 12th standard, basic physics, let's say it's a physics journal. So if you're 11th standard physics, 12th standard physics, then basic bachelor's level physics, when that foundation is very strong, and you have read about gravity, you have read about magnetism, electromagnetics and all those things, when your understanding is very clear, when you read the journal paper, you will see these laws and theories coming alive in various experiments. Correct? So that is journals. Journals are case studies where people write about their experiments where they saw various, these physical laws, coming alive. They explain it through various physical laws which they have understood through their textbook knowledge. What if I give you a bunch of journals about a subject matter you don't know at all? I say you read through these 100 journals and write a textbook based on your understanding of this journal. Is it possible? It's not possible. That's exactly what Bhaktivedanta Swami Sindhu is. The journal is Bhagavatam. The textbook is Bhaktivedanta Swami Sindhu. So whatever principles, are presented in Bhaktivedanta Swami Sindhu actually come alive in Bhagavatam. But the book was written in reverse order. First Bhagavatam was studied, understood. Nana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipunau Sadharma Samstapakau. Just like, there were many, many people who observed an apple falling or an orange falling, whatever. But there were very few people like Newton who came up with explaining it. So, similarly, probably many people studied Bhagavatam. But no one so systematically presented the science of devotion as Rupa Goswami has done ever in the history of Vaishnavism. So he has gone through the journals and created a textbook out of it. And when we read the textbook, you really don't appreciate it so much. But then if you think, it took someone of the caliber of Rupa Goswami it took him 17 years with the able assistance of Jiva Goswami to write this book, then it must be something very great. So, in the beginning of this book, Madhurya Kadambini, Srila Vishnachari Thakur, he writes a very beautiful verse glorifying Rupa Goswami. He says, Bhakti Purvai Shritastamtu Rasam Pashyet Yad Attadi Tam Naomi Satatam Rupa Nama Priyajanam Harehe. He says, Bhakti Purvai Shritastamtu. Many, many people have taken shelter of bhakti. Many great acharyas have taken shelter of bhakti. They have experienced rasa. They have achieved prema and gone back home back to Godhead. But still, I respect all of them, but my repeated respects is to Rupa Goswami only. Why? Because he said, Because by the mercy of Rupa Goswami, even common devotees can see bhakti rasa. So, as a science, you don't have to wait till you reach the stage of bhava or prema to experience rasa or to understand rasa. Even when you are at the level of sadhana bhakti, through bhakti rasamrita sindhu, you can understand what is bhakti rasa. That is due to the mercy of Rupa Goswami. He says, Rasam Pashyet. Bhakti Rasa can be seen and understood and appreciated even at the stage of Sadhana Bhakti, and that is due to the grace of Srila Rupa Goswami. That is what Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur mentions. So basically, if one understands Bhakti Rasam Sindhu clearly, then Bhakti Rasam Sindhu and Bhagavad Gita, these two are textbooks actually. That's why Prabhupada put them in Bhakti Shastri course. Even though they were produced from Bhagavatam, at least Bhakti Rasam Sindhu is a product of Bhagavatam, but still, because the nature of the book is that it's a textbook. So if your textbook knowledge is very clear, when you read journals, you will see the principles coming alive in the various pastimes of the journal. But if someone has not read and understood the textbook properly, if he is not properly grounded in the knowledge of the textbook, when he reads the journal, he can't really understand, you know, what exactly is happening. As Kunti Maharani says in one of her prayers, Nato Natya Daro Yata. It is like a person who cannot understand the nuances of dance. You know, he does not understand what is Abhinaya and what is Mudra and when the dancer is moving his or her eyes in a particular way, what exactly is being expressed. If the person cannot understand, he can still go watch a dance show and come back. He may get some entertainment, but he probably will not understand what exactly was the pastime that was depicted, what exactly was being conveyed. So interesting. I didn't think of this analogy, I just remembered Kunti Maharani's analogy. But Bhakti Rasam Sindhu, the whole framework for Bhakti Rasam Sindhu was based on Bharat Muni's Natya Shastra. The one who was responsible for the Bharatanatyam. So Bharat Muni. So he wrote a book on Natya Shastra. So in that he shows about, he talks about dance based on rasa. But of course he talks about mundane rasa only, because whatever rasa is experienced in the spiritual world, in a perverted way it is expressed, it's experienced in the material world also. And there is astonishing level of similarity between spiritual rasa and material rasa. Some very foundational differences are there, but in its form, it very much resembles mundane rasa, or the experience of mundane rasa. In its form, it resembles, but in its foundation and in intensity, it is quite different. So therefore, Rupa Goswami, because it has the same form, he took the framework of Bharat Muni's Natya Shastra and then in a very ingenious way, he explained the nature of spiritual emotions or rasa. So we will be discussing verse by verse, and we will also try to understand why we are doing it, why we are doing this, going over this exercise of doing it verse by verse. And Prabhupada has already given us NOD. And what is the difference between NOD and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? All of that we will try to see. Today's session will be more or less like a, like an introduction. So, and for those of you who are coming new for the first time, because many of the devotees here are, they attended the previous course also. So they know, this is, we don't have an official Q&A session. So while we are discussing, at any point if there is something which is not clear, you can please raise your hands and you can ask anytime. We are not, because it's not like an at a, like a certificate course, we are not really hard pressed for time, so we can take some time out for a Q&A anytime. And if you want to share something, some principle we are discussing, and definitely you would have some experience which is echoing this principle that we are discussing, especially if we are practicing bhakti, definitely the principles described in Bhaktirasam Sindhu would echo in some experience in your life. You can always raise your hands and share, "Oh, this very much, you know, I have an experience of this." Or if something we are discussing, your experience is completely contradictory to what is being described here in this book, you are welcome to share, and we can discuss why we are having such, you know, we can see if we can explain this phenomenon or not, whatever. But the point is, you don't have to wait till the end of the class for an official Q&A session. Anytime you can please raise your hands and we can have a discussion about it. Okay. So, Srila Jiva Goswami, who was partnering Rupa Goswami throughout this 17 years and more, especially in compiling this Bhaktirasam Sindhu, he writes about what was the inspiration of Rupa Goswami to compile this book. What inspired Rupa Goswami to compile this book, Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu? So he says, "Obsessed by a desire to benefit all the devotees of the Lord, the esteemed author Srila Rupa Goswami compiled this remarkable work, the scripture called Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, using the rasa presented in Srimad Bhagavatam, which appeared within the lotus bud of his heart." So he says, what was the inspiration? A deep obsession within the heart of Rupa Goswami. And what was that obsession? A desire to benefit the devotees of the Lord. So how did he choose to benefit the devotees of the Lord? Using the rasa presented in Srimad Bhagavatam. So using the rasa presented in Srimad Bhagavatam, Rupa Goswami thought that this is what can truly benefit humanity. So let me compile a book which explains the rasa which is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. So you all can become a teacher of this course at the end of this course. If, in fact, you all should, because ideally that's how the best way to learn is by teaching. So I'll share all this course material with you. You can, you know, it's your reading material, and then if you want to teach, you can use this material. But just by taking this material, you will not be able to teach. There are few points, if you do, then it will be very helpful and you can definitely teach this course. You know, it could be to one person, it could be to a few people, it could be to a big group. In fact, probably this is the biggest group that I have taught this course to. I have probably taught NOD about 20 times. And many of those times, almost 6-7 times, it has been to just one person. But it's a very wonderful book, so you don't really mind sharing it even with one person. And once you go over this course, you will really realize it. And you won't also really mind sharing it with just one person. But there are a few things you need to do. First is, you have to attend all the classes. So this involves planning and prioritizing. So if you can plan your week, then you can attend. If you can revise the notes at home, you know, if it's ashram or somewhere, or if within family more than one person is attending the course, you can form some study groups or whatever. PPTs are there, audio recordings are there, you can always take and you can revise. The most important point is this, the third point. You please participate in the class. Don't just be audience. If you can participate, that would be wonderful. Please ask. Participation means asking relevant questions, or even if you may think it's silly but relevant to the subject matter, we can definitely ask. And when a discussion is happening in the class, you please participate. If you think you have something to share, you can please participate. And fourth thing which we are not going to do, unless if someone is really interested, then maybe for those group, you can write exams, but I won't definitely insist on that. And it's not official also, we are not going to conduct unless I can share the question paper with you if you want to write. Okay, so if you do these just few things, which is not much to ask for actually, you can definitely teach this course, and you all should, because this is our
foundation.
This is our foundation actually. The whole the science of bhakti is based on this book. So if you can do these few things, then definitely, and this is true for any course, this is not just for this course, this is true for any course, if you can do little revision, little participation and attend all the classes, then definitely you all can teach. Yes, bro. So I can share it with Sukumar Krishna Prabhu. So Sukumar Krishna, I'll give him the PPTs and I'll make a PDF of these. There are just 4 PPTs and you don't need any other study material. You can just go over this. It has Prabhupada's NOD, all the verses with the Anvaya, and it has Jiva Goswami's commentary and Vishnachakra Thakur's commentary, and everything is there. So I'll share the PPTs with Sukumar Krishna Prabhu and the PDFs, whichever suits you, you can take and you can.
So,
yeah.
One more question. So the first point, then the second point cover the first point. This is available. Yes, I'm asking you.
If you miss one of the classes, you can always recordings, audio recordings of already conducted courses are available, or even we will try to update it in ISKCON Desiree, or I will try to share the audio immediately with Sukumar Krishna Prabhu, just in case you have missed one class and you want to revise before coming to the next class, you can always take the audio from Sukumar Krishna Prabhu. Yes, bro.
When you said this, Srimad Bhagavatam is like Lord Janma.
Lord Janma.
Yeah. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is the text.
Textbook, yeah.
Actually, when we started Srimad Bhagavatam, it was told Bhagavad Gita is the textbook.
Correct.
And Srimad Bhagavatam is the journal.
Yeah.
So, in that way, how would you compare it?
Yeah. So, both Bhagavad Gita and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu are textbooks only. So Bhagavad Gita is a little more generic textbook which also talks about other paths. It talks about karma, it talks about yoga, it talks about bhakti, and within bhakti it talks about mixed devotion, it talks about pure devotion. So it gives a very solid understanding of all these all these paths with, and it also explains the hierarchy of these paths in a nice way. But the nature of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is it zooms into only the pure devotional service part of that Bhagavad Gita and expands on it. So it is like a, you can say Bhagavad Gita, if Bhagavad Gita is like a science textbook, then Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is like a, you can say, electromagnetics textbook, which is one small aspect of that, which is super specialized. Which is relevant to our practice, because we are not practicing Jnana Yoga, we are not practicing Ashtanga Yoga, we are not practicing Karma Yoga, we are not even practicing Karma Mishra Bhakti or Jnana Mishra Bhakti or Yoga Mishra Bhakti. We are practicing pure devotional service. So, what exactly it is, it's like a, but the nature of both is textbooks.
Mentioned
that the purpose of writing this book was for even a common devotee to understand the rasa. Correct. So that level, it's
at Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti,
it's only possible to understand. Yeah, at Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we can understand, but not experience. But through Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we can eventually become qualified to experience it. Okay. So, let's try to understand about this book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Why is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu a very important book for the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya? It is because it gives precise definitions of very important items in our Sampradaya, like Bhakti, Prema, Rasa, different types of Rasa, you know, all these terminologies which we may very loosely use. It gives very precise definitions to these terminologies. But we may say, but why do we need precise definitions? We are not reading science. Science needs very precise definitions. If instead of H2O, if I give you a glass of H2O2, hydrogen peroxide, just one oxygen atom more, what happens? If you drink a glass of hydrogen peroxide, what will happen? I have never tried, but definitely something not so pleasant will happen. So you may say that bhakti is not science, bhakti is emotions. How can you encapsulate emotions into some precise definition? How is it possible? So you may say, so why do we need precise definitions for explaining bhakti? Because if we don't have precise definitions, definition of things, then we will fall into confusion. Because, for example, I may talk about bhakti and you may have a different understanding of what bhakti is. So, if we are using same terminologies, we must have same understanding, a common understanding or a common definition of the terminologies that we are using. Otherwise, we cannot have an intelligent discussion at all. So, therefore, before starting a particular discussion, we have to see that if we do have a common understanding of the terminologies that we are using or not. Because bhakti generally means, as it is explained in the books, in the Shastras, bhakti generally means without any material desires. But in most cases, when people practice it, it is with full of material desires. Bhakti means only for Krishna or Vishnu, according to the Shastras. But we see terms like Desh Bhakti, Samaj Bhakti and all those things. You will never see such things in Shastras, because bhakti by default means for Vishnu. So, and many times when people talk about bhakti, they generally refer to some kind of an emotional tendency. But bhakti involves lot of practical service also. Actually, emotional tendency has to translate into practical service. Therefore, the way in which bhakti is defined or what constitutes bhakti, it's actually defined in terms of practical activities. Hearing, chanting, remembering, serving the lotus feet, worshipping the deities, all these are practical activities where, you know, nothing much is clearly mentioned about emotions, because emotions will naturally transform into actions. A mother's love for her child is an emotion, but it naturally transforms into the mother cooking for the child, cleaning the child, taking care of the child. It is natural. So what happens to a person whose heart is imbued with devotional emotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead? How does it translate into action? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Mandanam, Dasim, Sakyam, Atmani Vedanam. But this, people can understand it in when it comes to material emotions. But somehow, when it comes to spiritual emotions, they say that, oh, it's just an emotion that's there inside me. How can I show it outside? So therefore, when people speak about bhakti, they generally think in terms of some emotional tendency. But in most cases, that emotional tendency translates into very definite pattern of activities. Actually, if that bhakti is practiced according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, it translates into a particular pattern of activities. And also, if you see, many words in Sanskrit have multiple meanings. You know, you take a Sanskrit dictionary like Amarakosh, Vishwakosh. One word, you'll say, it means this, 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 this. Sometimes 7, 8, 10 meanings they have. So, for example, the word Atma, something as simple as Atma. Atma can mean body, Atma can mean soul, Atma can mean mind, Atma can mean intelligence. Atma can mean essence of a substance. Sometimes in one verse only, the word Atma can mean multiple things. As in Bhagavad Gita 6th chapter, Krishna says, Bandur Atmatmanastasya Yenatmai Vatmanajitaha Anatmanastu Shatrutve Vartet Atmai Vashatruva. So many times the word Atma, 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 Atma comes. You know. So it in that very same word it means mind, intelligence, soul, everything. So unless you tell me clearly, you know, you define things clearly, then you can use the same word and it could mean so many different things. So just on the way, when I was coming in tempo traveler from GV to Gopinath, I was hearing His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj's old Ramayan lectures. So he was talking about how when Valmiki Muni was taking bath and he saw a hunter, kill one of the Krauncha Pakshi, or Krauncha bird. The male Krauncha bird and the female Krauncha bird was, you know, wailing in distress. And he cursed the hunter. Spontaneously a curse came out. And Brahmaji came and explained that, what you see as a curse is actually, you know, the beginning verse of Ramayana, like that. Same words, he didn't change the words. That is the nature of the language. So, therefore, we need to have, you know, very common definitions. And Bhaktirasama Sindhu gives these common definitions. Because you can't synthesize your own definition. I mean, that is the prerogative of acharyas. And practically, all the terminologies used in Bhaktirasama Sindhu are, most of the terminologies are coined by Rupa Goswami. Because you don't see something like Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti in a book like Bhagavad Gita. It is a term coined by Rupa Goswami. Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, you will never find it in Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. It is a term coined by Rupa Goswami. In order to explain a particular concept very clearly. So, he coins a terminology, explains it, defines it very clearly, gives proof for it from various Shastras, so that when it is clear, then you can use that terminology. Because we have to properly know what that terminology means before we use that terminology to explain things. So, when we precisely talk about a subject, and in order to accomplish anything based on explaining the subject, we need to have precise definitions. Otherwise, that doesn't have any meaning. You know, we can't go anywhere to have a meaningful discussion. So, if you want to have a philosophy that is intelligent and acceptable, it has to have very precise definition. And that's exactly what one of the things that Bhaktirasam Sindhu really does is clearly define things in a very precise way. Okay, anyway, we have discussed this. I won't get too much into this. So, now let's, this is about Bhaktirasam Sindhu. Basically, it's a book of definitions, at least in the first 19 chapters. Actually, if you, in the first 19 chapters, if you just want to understand the philosophy that Rupa Goswami is trying to explain, the first 19 chapters can be sort of summarized in two sides of one sheet of paper. That's all. There is not much. But it becomes so voluminous because he gives so many proofs to substantiate his point. He explains that how desire for mukti is very detrimental for practicing bhakti. And he gives some 30-40 quotations from Bhagavatam and other scriptures to substantiate this point. And on top of that, Jiva Goswami writes some commentary and Vishnadeva Thakur writes some commentary, Prabhupada writes some commentary. And then the whole thing becomes quite voluminous. But otherwise, if you just summarize the concepts that Rupa Goswami is trying to explain and the definitions that he is trying to give, that can be summarized in the two sides of one A4 size sheet. That's all. So that's all he does actually in one sense. But he thoroughly substantiates his point by quoting various quotations from various scriptures. So what is this nectar of devotion that Prabhupada wrote? How is it connected to Bhaktirasam Sindhu? Is it a translation of Bhaktirasam Sindhu? What exactly it is? The nectar of devotion is not a translation of Bhaktirasam Sindhu, it is a summary study. So what is a, can you think of some other summary study that Prabhupada wrote? Krishna book is a summary study of 10th canto. Teachings of Lord Chaitanya is a summary study of some sections of Chaitanya Charitamrita, like Ramananda Samvad, Sanatan Siksha, Roop Siksha. So those sections have been compiled into one book. But it's a summary study. So, what are the advantages of a summary study? From the author's point of view, what are the advantages of presenting a summary study? First is, comparing the NOD text that Prabhupada wrote to the verses of Bhaktirasam Sindhu, if you compare both, we will be doing it. You know, you can go over it and compare. It is evident that Srila Prabhupada gave his dictations while simultaneously consulting the commentaries, just as in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, etc. So if you see, there is a very solid correlation of what Rupa Goswami has written, he goes exactly in that order. However, in the Nectar of Devotion, he did not use a standard format. What was standard format? Verse. Sanskrit script, then Roman transliteration, then word-to-word meaning, translation, purport. He does not follow that pattern. Thus, so what is the advantage of that? Sometimes he can take the liberty to greatly expand on the original text whenever he feels that his audience needed a more relevant explanation. He can expand on it. And he does. And sometimes if some subject matter is too esoteric for his current audience, he can just summarize the whole thing, which he does. Sometimes that which is described in 20-30 verses, Prabhupada just summarizes it in one paragraph only. This is sufficient for you, like that. Of course, those are mainly in the later sections. In the earlier sections, first 19 chapters, more or less Prabhupada has translated practically everything. So, what is the result? Probably more people have studied Srila Rupa Goswami's teachings through the Nectar of Devotion than through the original text that Rupa Goswami wrote. Does it mean that ISKCON devotees should not or need not read the original text of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? Srila Prabhupada wrote teachings of Lord Chaitanya as summary study and also subsequently gave Chaitanya Charitamrita a comprehensive commentary text by text. Srila Prabhupada wrote Krishna book, which is a summary study of the 10th canto, and also subsequently gave Srimad Bhagavatam a comprehensive commentary text by text. Thus, to fully appreciate Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, one requires a complete translation of texts and commentaries. It really helps. I don't want to influence you by telling that it really helps. At the end of this course, you can share if it has helped your understanding or not. So, you forget this point because I don't want to bias you. I don't want to bias your thoughts. At the end of it, if you feel that your understanding has been little bit enhanced, then you can share. So, teachings of Lord Chaitanya is very good, but it is not a replacement for Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, thus in our course, we will refer to the original texts wherever necessary, which is practically every text we will refer to. So,
why Prabhupada has restricted only 19 chapters in Bhakti Shastri course?
Because he has not restricted only first 19 chapters, but for Bhakti Shastri course only 19, because for understanding the subsequent subject matters of rasa. Because we are going to see the contents of the book. When we understand the contents of the book, I will touch upon this point. Beyond 19, it needs some prior qualification to understand. So, at least some level of spiritual advancement is needed to understand that subject matter of Bhakti Rasa. So, first 19 chapters talks about Bhakti. But the reason why Rupa Goswami writes about Bhakti in the first 19 chapters is to lay the foundation for discussing Bhakti Rasa. The book is not Bhakti Amrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion. It's actually Nectar of Devotional Rasa, Devotional Emotions. But for that, one needs to understand a very basic foundational understanding of Bhakti. So, in the first 19 chapters, he lays that foundation. And on that foundation, he builds the superstructure of Bhakti Rasa. But if that foundation is not very clear, then you cannot appreciate, the superstructure cannot stand. And because Bhakti Shastri is a foundational course, only the first 19 chapters are there. So, the superstructure can come once the foundation gets properly stabilized. You know, you cure that foundation nicely, you know, water it, and when it is properly cured, then you can construct a superstructure on that. That is why I am not very sure if it was Prabhupada who said only the first 19 chapters should be in the Bhakti Shastri course, but at least for me, it makes perfect sense, because beyond 19 chapters, it definitely needs some years of proper practice of chanting and hearing and proper devotional service in order to it requires some level of devotional progress to understand the subsequent subject matters. So we will start by, so that is like a very brief introduction of the book and how it is similar to Nectar of Devotion and how it is different from Nectar of Devotion. So if there are any quick comments based on this introduction part, comments, questions, we'll take. If not, we'll move ahead. Okay, so in the preface, now we will go through the preface of Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion and let's see how Prabhupada explains about the book in his preface. Srila Prabhupada says, bhakti means devotional service. So, mitam cha saram cha vachohi vagmita iti. So this is Jiva Goswami quotes this, and this quoted by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in his Chaitanya Charitamrita also, where he defines what is eloquence. He says, essential truth spoken concisely is true eloquence. Essential truth spoken concisely. Concisely means with the least, you know, there is not one redundant word. If you can perfectly explain it in two words, why do you need a third word to explain it? Just explain it in two words. So that is eloquence. So Prabhupada defines bhakti as devotional service. If you see, there is a verse in Garuda Puran which is quoted many times by our acharyas, which explains the root word bhaj from which bhakti comes. So it says, bhaja iti eshavai dhatu sevayam parikirtitah tasmat seva budair prokta bhakti shabdena bhuyasi. So he says, bhaja iti eshavai dhatu. Dhatu means the root word. So bhakti comes from the root word bhaja. He says, bhaja dhatu sevayam parikirtita indicates seva, he says. Tasmat seva budair prokta bhakti shabdena bhuyasi. Therefore, intelligent people explain bhakti to mean devotional service. So, who defined bhakti as devotional service? Srila Prabhupada. And Garuda Puran says, whoever defines bhakti as devotional service, he says, budaihi. He is intelligent. Because bhajadatu naturally indicates service. Therefore, bhakti means devotional service. Bhakti connotes devotion or love, and love implies service. Like we saw, you can't say, I love someone, but at the same time, you don't do anything. So therefore, any emotion naturally manifests in the form of some practical activity. The anger of emotion, the emotion of anger, it manifests physically. You know, the eyes become red, the ears become red, and eventually, if anger is sufficient, you know, one may get physical or verbal, or you may plot against him. It eventually manifests into some kind of action. Similarly, you know, all other kinds of emotion. Similarly, bhakti also. Bhakti connotes devotion or love, and love implies service, activity to please the beloved. Thus, devotional service is an eloquent definition of bhakti. Srila Prabhupada says, the basic principle of the living condition is that we have a general propensity to love someone. No one can live without loving someone else. So Prabhupada first talks about how he writes his prefaces. First he defines what is bhakti, expounds on bhakti, then he says, then he expounds on rasa, what is rasa, then he expounds on amrita, and then he expounds on sindhu. So then you get a very clear understanding of the meaning of this book, the title of this book, Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu. Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu. So he's talking about bhakti. So bhakti, he says, that is devotional service, and he says the basic principle of living condition is that we have a general propensity to love someone. No one can live without loving someone else. And Prabhupada says, in the primary stage, a child loves his parents. He starts. Then he loves his brothers and sisters. As he daily grows up, he begins to love his family, society, community, country, nation, and even the whole human society. But what happens to him? But that loving propensity is not satisfied. Even by loving all human society, that loving propensity remains imperfectly fulfilled until we know who the Supreme Beloved is. So, until we know who the Supreme Beloved is, until the root is watered, the tree will not get nourishment completely. Of course, you can also water the leaves. It will give some kind of nourishment because, you know, the trees get nourishment through photosynthesis also, right? So through the roots is one way you get nourishment. The trees get nourishment, but sometimes when it's a dusty let's say garden, and if dust accumulates on the leaves, then you know, photosynthesis efficiency is very, very much compromised. So, but still, if you just water the leaves and don't water the root, you know, the tree cannot just sustain by photosynthesis alone. So you have to water the root. So one may say, you have to water the leaves also. We don't have to bother about it because Krishna says, Urdhva Moolam Adashakam Ashwattam Prahuravyayam Chandam Siyasya Parnani Yastam Vedasa Vedavit. The 15th chapter, first verse, Bhagavad Gita, he says, this material world is an inverted tree. So, where is the root? On top. And where are the leaves? At the bottom. So, if the roots are at the top and if you water the root, what will happen to that water? It will anyway come and fall on the leaves also. So, we don't have to really bother. Of course, that's just a joke. So the point is, as long as you water the root, then the tree gets truly nourished. So, but the loving propensity remains imperfectly fulfilled until we know who the Supreme Beloved is. So if you don't know who that Supreme Beloved is, our desire for our loving propensity can never fulfill us. Love can become all-embracing only when we understand that Krishna is the Supreme Beloved. He is the root of all creation. By embracing Him, one successfully embraces everyone. As pouring water on the root of a tree successfully nourishes every leaf and branch. So, what is that? Yada taror moola nishechanena tripyanti tatskanda bujopashaka. Bhagavatam says, just like when you pour water to the root of the tree, it nourishes the whole tree. Similarly, tataiva sarvarhanam achyutejya. By worshipping Krishna and by loving Krishna, ultimately you love everyone. Srila Prabhupada says, the nectar of devotion teaches us the science of loving every one of the living entities perfectly by the easy method of loving Krishna. So what is the subject matter of this book? It teaches one how you can love everyone perfectly by the simple, easy method of loving Krishna. This is about bhakti. Then he talks about rasa. What is rasa? Srila Prabhupada says, the word rasa used in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is understood by different persons differently because the exact English equivalent is very difficult to find. Many words, many Sanskrit words do not have exact English equivalent. Therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the late 1800s and in very early 1900s, he wanted to compile something called as Vaishnava Encyclopedia. He called it Vaishnava Manjusha. He envisioned it to be a huge work. So, where he wanted to formulate new English words which can perfectly explain various concepts which are discussed in the Vaishnava Shastras. So, in late 1800s and early 1900s, his idea was, he estimated it to be the project to cost about 5 lakhs. 5 lakhs in those days. Yes. Huh? So I'll just give you an understanding of how much that money is. Prabhupada Sanyas Guru, Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj, those of you who know some history, he was, before he joined the Gaudiya Math, he was working, and one particular Gaudiya Math with many brahmacharis staying there, he was donating to that math. And once he decided to join the math, the whole math panicked. They all went to Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur and they reported, this person is planning to join the mutt. He said, so what? Very good. He said, practically all the donation for the mutt comes from him. So if he joins, so he will not work. So where will the donation come from? And how much was he donating? 5 rupees per month. Okay. So that's what he was donating. Yeah. And he was like the main donor of that money. So they were, so I'm just trying to tell you, you know, what was the value of 5 rupees in those days. So 5 lakhs was, so when, I think the king of Manipur or he was like very much inspired by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And when he heard that he wanted to do this Vaishnava Encyclopedia, he said, I will finance it. And then he asked, how much? He said, 5 lakhs. The king got the shock of his life. He thought, you know, so how much would it cost to write a book like that? Because it involved, you know, lot of solid research. And he envisioned it to be a huge multi-volume project. So that practically, you know, a new Vaishnava language he wanted to create. English language only, but all Vaishnava terminologies. And one who studies that encyclopedia, he clearly knows. So then, like here, Prabhupada is telling, the exact English equivalent of the word rasa is very difficult to find. But as we have seen, our spiritual master translate this word rasa into mellow. which is not the exact translation. We shall follow in his footsteps and also translate the word in that way. But actually this is not the exact explanation of the word drasa. There is no proper English equivalent. Of course, the project, the king did finance the first volume, and after that it stopped. So one volume came out, and I heard that after passing away of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, one more volume, they prepared the material, but it was never published. So that was the end of it. So, but Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur really did want that encyclopedia Vaishnava Manjusha, and if that was there, and if all Vaishnavas would study that Vaishnava Manjusha, then you know you could write books using those terminologies, and then you know you don't really need to be apologetic, as Prabhupada is, you know. Oh, there is no equivalent word in English, but so we will use the word mellow to explain it like that. Relationships are, so Prabhupada now he is giving one example of Vaishnava Manjusha work. You know, if in Vaishnava Manjusha rasa is explained, you know, how it would be explained? So Prabhupada is explaining it now. Relationships are comparable to fruits. The pleasure we taste in these relationships is the juice, the mellow, the rasa. The taste of a fruit is what attracts us to eat it. Taste and flavor. Similarly, the force that attracts us to a certain activity or relationship is the taste we enjoy in it. If you cut a lime and you squeeze it and nothing comes out of it, you know, will you pay for that lime? You know, you squeeze it, you know, the lime is there, seed is there, skin is there, everything is there. If the juice is not there, we will not pay for it, because we are paying for the juice. After using it, we throw the skin away. Of course, you don't have to, you can make pickles out of those skin also. But mostly we pay for the juice only. Similarly, the force that attracts us to a certain activity or relationship is the taste we enjoy in it. Srila Prabhupada says, driven by affection for his wife and children, a family man works day and night. A philanthropist works in the same way for love of the greater family, and a nationalist for the cause of his country and countrymen. The force which drives the philanthropist, the householder and the nationalist is called rasa, or a kind of mellow whose taste is very sweet. I remember once my cousin brother, he asked me when he came to know, when the first time he met after I joined the ashram, maybe the second time, I don't recollect. So he asked me, your life must be so peaceful. So you are so lucky, your life must be so peaceful, like that he was telling. Then I said, you are welcome. So he said, oh, no. Then I said, look, we always choose, our choice is never based on peace, even though you are mentioning it. It's a very superficial thing. That is why you immediately said no, because he has a very, he's in a very high post, and its work is very stressful job. It's a very stressful job. So I said, look, you don't, your job is not so peaceful, your boss is not so peaceful, your working environment is not so peaceful. If you give up your job, so much peace you will get, but still you don't choose it. Did you ever think about giving up your job? He said, maybe for a few minutes, and then, I always understood it's a ridiculous idea. So I said, see, look, you always choose love over peace. Anyone, any day. If it is available even in small quantities, we always choose love over peace. So I said, why do you think I should be any different? So therefore, you know, you are getting some pleasure out of pleasing your family, your children, your parents, your wife. So I am similarly getting pleasure serving the bigger family. So ultimately, I never chose it for peace, and I am not staying for peace. And the fact is, it's not peaceful also. So therefore, and then he actually understood. But initially he was just arguing, peaceful. I said, you never make choices, with peace as the parameter. So I said, no. He said, yes. Then he was not even for a moment he was willing to consider giving up his job, because you know, it would give so much pleasure, even though it was not giving him pleasure. But as Prabhupada writes in one of the, I think it is, which? Pantaha Swasharanam Yata, which? Dautatma Purusha Krishna Paramulam Munchati Mukta Sarva Pariklesha Pantaha Swasharanam Yata. So he says in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So there Prabhupada writes a beautiful purport. So Prabhupada writes that if when a person goes out to, in early days, mostly people would work around their house only, or at least within their village. Very rarely some merchants would take their merchandise and go to a far distant place where it does not grow to sell it. So sometimes, and because not much of conveyance was available, it was always a very troublesome journey. So, but the person would think that, how nice would it be if I just stay at home? But then he would think, oh, but if I earn this money, my family members will become very pleased. So when he thinks that, all that trouble that he is actually going through now, that evaporates. So Prabhupada says, similarly, all of us are in a family relationship with Krishna. So therefore, when we are in a family relationship with Krishna, then when we perform these, hardships, whatever we may have to go through in executing devotional service, it gives us pleasure, because we know eventually Guru will be pleased, Krishna will be pleased, Vaishnavas will be pleased, because we are all in a family relationship with Krishna, and hence we are in a family relationship with our Guru and the Vaishnavas. That's what we sang at the beginning of this course. Dhanamora Nityananda, Patimora Gaurachandra. Like that. So, that's what Prabhupada says, that so that force which drives the philanthropist, the householders and the nationalist is called rasa, or a kind of milo. Why is he sacrificing peace? The nationalist can be peaceful if he does not have to go and cry slogans and go on a peace march and all those things. Or whatever. Or if he, sometimes he may get arrested and put in the jail. If only he would have just sat at home and watched TV, then, life would have been so much more peaceful. What is pulling him out of his comfort zone, out of his peace zone, and pushing him to do activities which might eventually create troubles for him? That is rasa, Prabhupada. That's how Prabhupada explains rasa. That which inspires you to sacrifice peace over some over rasa. That is what is called as rasa. That what that which is inspiring you to sacrifice your peace for pleasing someone else, that is rasa. So that personality could be a family member, that personality could be a society, that personality could, or that entity could be the nation or humanity, like that. So that's how Prabhupada very wonderfully explains this rasa. But having explained rasa in this way, this is a very generic explanation. But the word rasa is used in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is not the juice experienced by a philanthropist or a householder or a humanitarian like that, or a nationalist. So therefore Prabhupada very quickly explains that there are two kinds of rasa. One is called as bhakti rasa and another is called as mundane rasa. Bhakti rasa means the taste relished in devotional service to Krishna. And mundane rasa is the taste enjoyed by sense gratification. Yes, ma'am.
The force that drives a person to do something, so is it necessary that it has to be love or some kind of, or I mean, sometimes people do things out of a sense of duty. So is that also a force, or that rasa, or that's just...
Yeah, correct. That is also a kind of force. But that sense of duty would also have some element of desire to please someone. You want to perform that duty to please whom? The sense of duty might be like the predominant force also, but then at the bottom of it there would be some element of love that would be driving that sense of duty also. Because in order to please someone, one may do it by hook or crook, and one may do it in a very righteous way. So there the modes come into picture. So a person in mode of goodness would like to please his family members by doing everything in a very dutiful, righteous way, whereas a person in mode of passion or ignorance would try to cut corners and do it. But nevertheless, all of them want to please the family members, please the nation. Like Maharaj, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, in his book Journey Home, he writes about, in fighting for the freedom of blacks. There was Martin Luther King, who was, the peaceful strategy he took. And there were others like probably Malcolm X and others who were like more fiery, let's fight fire with fire, like that. So, but the point is, everyone was they were like fighting for their race. That love for that race was there, but then in a person who was more in mode of goodness, he wanted to fight for that race in a very peaceful way. The other person who was little bit more in passion, he wanted to fight fire with fire, but somehow the driving force was that love for race, like that. Yes, bro.
We have the varnashram system.
Yes.
So based on your propensity and nature, you will be driven. We gave the example of Vasatmanya Buddha.
Correct.
So, it would be in an environment where he's driven to love something, or he's getting the rasa there.
Correct.
And you're getting this rasa here. So, even if he was brought here and put in this environment, he would still not get that pleasure.
Correct.
But then how is varnashram system relevant? Because you will act, if you're a kshatriya, then you will have a tendency to be a kshatriya. You will get a rasa in fighting. You may not get rasa in doing something else. So, how do you break this up into mundane rasa and bhakti rasa at that time? Because Kshatriya is also in the ashram. will also have the rasa of, you get more rasa in doing something actively.
Yeah. So, this we will discuss little more when we get into discussing the topic of sadhana bhakti, but which will be after some time. But still, we don't, I will just briefly touch on this topic. Varnashram is one way of dovetailing, is one system which Krishna has created to dovetail people's propensities. Bhakti is the other system that he has created to dovetail one's propensities. So that's why we have like 64 items, which are like in one sense encapsulates practically, and this 64 also, as mentioned in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami clarifies before talking about these 64 limbs. He says that if you read Hari Bhakti Vilas, Srila Sanatana Goswami has mentioned lakhs and lakhs of limbs of bhakti, but I have just condensed and presented only the essential limbs of bhakti, like that he says. So practically, sadhana bhakti is also one of the systems that Krishna has given to dovetail our propensities. So ultimately, our propensities need to be dovetailed in Krishna's service till we develop a kind of love which supersedes our propensities, that even though our propensity may pull us in a particular direction, still we do that which only pleases Krishna. Till then, Krishna gives you an opportunity to practice both. Someone may like ice cream so much, butterscotch, let's say. And if in the refrigerator there is one butterscotch ice cream and his son also wants it. Okay. So while he was a bachelor, he would have just finished it off without even thinking twice. But after getting married and when the son says, oh, I want it, he'll happily give. Even though, because that, you know, that the propensity is there, not that he has developed a distaste for butterscotch now. He still likes it, but now that he has developed that love, he's willing to forego it.
Overriding.
Yeah, when the overriding principle of love, that love overrides that need for that propensity to get fulfilled, you know, because fulfillment comes through love. So that the need for that seeking that fulfillment through engagement of our propensities, ultimately we want fulfillment. So if it comes through love, then we are happy even if some of our propensities, tongue is not satisfied, no problem, heart is satisfied. Ultimately through tongue we want to satisfy the heart only.
Yeah.
Like that.
I've always had this doubt, and though we read in Bhagavatam, the first canto itself, that this is not meant for Kali Yuga.
Yeah.
Varnashram is not meant for Kali Yuga. However, in later purport somewhere, and devotees have been talking a lot about it, that Prabhupada wanted this Varnashram system. So my doubt is that, should we really focus on that, or just let's only focus on...
Before focusing on that, we should understand what it is. Of course, if I start discussing about this topic, even in my brief itself would go quite long, because this is one topic for which I have a lot of passion to speak about. So I would, if you stick around till the later stages of this course, I will, we will discuss it in great detail. But in case if you don't stick around, then we will stay in contact and we will sit and discuss, because it's definitely a topic which if we go into it, then you know I won't be able to stop myself. So so for now I will not touch upon this topic, but in it's within the scope of Bhakti Rasama Sindhu, because Rupa Goswami talks a lot about Varnashram in the first 19 chapters only. So we will have a long discussion about it, but right now we will not do it.
Can you disclose your position? You can discuss it later.
It's not my position. I can present my understanding. My understanding is Varnashram as a social system is favorable, but whether Varnashram duties should devotees, is it mandatory for devotees? Not according to Rupa Goswami. So there is, so Varnashram as a social system is one thing, and that also is not, it's there is a, something which is mandatory and something which is recommended. So it is something which is recommended. It is definitely not mandatory, not according to Bhagavatam, not according to Rupa Goswami, not according to Prabhupada. So, but as a social system, it's a favorable system. You can, if one is successful in establishing it, but if it is not established also, can someone not perfect bhakti without it? They definitely can. That's the answer in brief. But then, Rupa Goswami himself is going to substantiate it in detail. In 2-3 sections, he will talk about this in great detail. So, we will definitely discuss about this in detail.
I'm grateful. Thank you for this question. Like in reply to Mataji's this thing, asking Mataji, I thought I understood it like somewhere you said that love should be the driving force. Somewhere that love is the driving force. So, I was thinking of relationships, like for example, in a college hostel. The seniors are ragging the juniors. So the senior is getting some kind of rasa in simply exploiting the juniors. So, but you know, there is no love in it. So is that also like a perverted rasa? That is
correct. That's a secondary rasa. But that cannot be the only rasa on which he is surviving. Like even in Bhakti rasa, there are secondary rasas like Virya ras, Bibhatsaras, Bhayanak ras, Adbhuta ras. All these rasas are there, but they are secondary. You cannot have only secondary rasa. That secondary rasa can be an additional rasa which supports the primary rasa. So a person may be ragging, but that may not be the thing that he might be doing 24 hours a day. That's the prime nourishment that he is getting is from studying and meditating on how I will get a job, and when I get a job, my parents will be happy. That is the primary thing. He is not there in college for ragging. Incidentally, that is one of the secondary rasas he started to like. That can't be the only thing that is giving him nourishment. So yes, true, that is there. Even Bhishma Dev was getting great nourishment shooting arrows on Krishna. But it's not that the purpose of his life is to shoot arrows on Krishna. You know, that is one way in which he was getting that rasa. But his primary rasa was Dasya ras. That's what he was. So in serving Krishna in that particular way, he was getting pleasure. Similarly, even in as friends of Krishna, the Gopas, they get lot of pleasure in hasyaras, in just joking around with Krishna. But that is only a secondary factor. The primary factor is serving him, massaging him, you know, ensuring that Krishna is happy. So that is what gives nourishment. So along with that, there are secondary rasas also, which are there. That's my understanding. So, Bhakti Rasa is the incalculably superior taste. Not only is it superior to sense gratification, it is limitlessly superior even to the bliss of spiritual emancipation, mukti. Further, Prabhupada quotes a verse, translation of a verse, which is later mentioned in Bhaktirasam Sindhu only. Brahmananda bhaved esha chet parardha guni krita, like that this verse comes. If Brahmananda or the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme is multiplied by 1 trillion fold, it's just a, you know, it's not exactly 1 trillion fold, it might be even more than it. It still cannot be compared to an atomic fraction of the happiness derived from the ocean of devotional service. So then Prabhupada says, this mundane rasa is of two types. Sorry, mundane rasa has two qualities. One is bhoga tyaga and chapala sukha. Bhoga tyaga means one wants to enjoy it, and after some time he gets bored with it and then he gives it up. Then again, he is not getting enjoyment from anything else, so he again goes to chew the chewed. But after some time, he does not get any much juice out of it. So he gives it up like that. Bhoga, tyaga. Bhoga, tyaga. Like that. The reason is that chapala sukha, there is very insignificant happiness that comes due to that bhoga, flickering duration of happiness. So, Srila Prabhupada writes, neither enjoyment nor renunciation, neither bhoga nor tyaga is the natural position of the soul. Therefore, one cannot remain permanently situated in either bhoga or tyaga. One will oscillate between the two, finding satisfaction in neither. Prabhupada gives the verdict also. You will keep oscillating and you will not find satisfaction in neither. This is eternal. In contrast, bhakti rasa is the natural position of the soul, and thus one can remain satisfied there perpetually without oscillation. Yasmin stitona dukkena gurunapi vichalyate. If one gets situated in that stage, even under greatest of distress, one would not want to give up that experience. And chapala sukha means the happiness of mundane rasa is always temporary and flickering. Chapala sukha lagala lagire. Even the greatest material pleasure must end at death. At least at the time of death it must end. In contrast, the pleasure of bhakti rasa does not flicker. So that's about rasa. He has spoken about bhakti. He has spoken about rasa. Then now he is going to speak about amrita. Srila Prabhupada says, bhakti rasa, however, the mellow relation in the transcendental loving service of the Lord does not finish with the end of life. It continues perpetually and is therefore called amrita, that which does not die but exists eternally. Nitya siddha krishna prema sadhya kabunan shravanadi shuddha chitta karaya udai. It is eternally present in our heart, even in conditioned state. Just because, there is this mobile phone, and if I just imagine that this is an opaque container, it's not. I cover it. I don't see it does not mean it's not there. Similarly, even in conditioned soul, the love for Krishna is there, but just that it's covered. When the covering is removed, the person sees that it is there. And the means of removing that covering is actually sadhana bhakti. But what is there inside is already there. So sadhana bhakti is not creating Krishna prema. Sadhana bhakti is just uncovering the lid and just stimulating, whatever is needed. Like, you have not, say you have not used this cell phone for a long time, the battery is dead, you have to find it, dust it, then charge it for a while. Like that. So that is what sadhana bhakti essentially does. Amrita also means nectar, a tasty beverage which makes one deathless. Devotional service not only bestows eternal pleasure, it is also the process of achieving eternality. Of course, the soul is always eternal, but the experience is not that we always fear death, even though we are eternal. But by practice of bhakti, when we elevate ourselves, we will not have to fear death, even though death may come and take the temporary body away. So therefore, he says that devotional service is also the process of achieving eternality. Yes. So, practicing bhakti initially does anartha nivritti till one reaches nishta. Then after that it gives artha pravritti. Artha pravritti means the relish in ruchi, asakti, and then eventually bhava and prema, like that. So, then finally Prabhupada concludes the purport by summarizing that this bhakti rasa amrita is actually oceanic, sindhu. Srila Prabhupada says, the nectarian pleasure derived from devotional service to Krishna is clearly superior to material sense gratification. One may sometimes manage to procure a few drops of sense pleasure, but there is an entire ocean of the nectar of devotion easily available to everyone always. By understanding the nectar of devotion, one can dive deeply into that ocean. Okay. So in this way, Prabhupada explains the title of this book, Bhakti, Rasa, Amrita and Sindhu. Okay. Any quick comments before we move on to the next section?
In the Arthi poetry, Sri Vaishnava understands the relationship that he has with the
world. He actually starts getting some tangible taste of that relationship.
He has not understood the
relationship. He has understood the relationship, but he has not realized it. There is a difference between like knowing a relationship. Like in one of my cousin sister's marriage, my mother introduced me to one of her cousin brothers whom I had never seen. So he said, oh, he is your uncle. So we know the relationship. He knows first time he was seeing me, first time I was seeing him. So he is my uncle, he is my nephew. Both of us got introduced. That is one level, knowing. And then eventually we started speaking and interacting, and we ended up speaking the whole night. Real story. The first time we met, and then, you know, I was just going to join the ashram. He came to know about it. He was very amused and he really wanted to know more about it. So we ended up spending the whole night and the next whole day till both of us departed from the marriage. We were talking and talking and talking, and at the end of it, we both had a very thick bond that we were experiencing from each other's, you know, from that relationship. Both of us were experiencing joy like that. One thing is to know, another is to actually experience that relationship like that. So Srila Prabhupada says, okay, so this is about the preface, Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu. Okay. So now, we still have about 10 minutes, so we will go through the next section. We'll start the next section and continue it next Tuesday. So, any book which is written generally in the form of a book, like for example, Bhagavad Gita was not written in the form of a book. So even though we say Atha Shodasho Adhyayaha, those things are not written by Krishna. It's not spoken. Now Arjuna, I'll speak the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, like that Krishna does not say. So, you know, seeing where there is a thematic change, the, you know, Vyasadeva has cut it and, you know, made it into a chapter. But generally any Vaishnava book contains certain aspects when, you know, the way the book is introduced. So, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, in the beginning of Adilila, he defines what constitutes the introduction part of a book. He says, Semangala Charanahaya Trivida Prakar Vastu Nirdesh Ashirvada Namaskara. So, he says, Semangala Charanahaya Trivida Prakar. Mangala Acharan means invoking auspiciousness. So he says, what constitutes invoking auspiciousness or what constitutes a Mangalacharan? He says three components. Vastu Nirdesh, Ashirvada and Namaskar. Vastu Nirdesh means ascertaining what is the subject matter of the book. What is this book going to talk about? Either it is directly ascertained or it is indirectly hinted. And Ashirvad means the author offering some benedictions to the readers. What will you gain if you read this book? And Namaskar is offering obeisances to some personalities. Who are they? We will see. So he says, Tritiya shloke tekari vastura nirdesh yaha hai te jani para tatvera uddesh. So first we are going to understand what is this vastu nirdesh. So, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, in the third verse, I indicate the absolute truth, who is the ultimate substance. Yaha haite jani para tatvera uddesh. With such a description, one can visualize the supreme truth. As Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wants one to visualize. How does Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wants one to visualize the absolute truth? In this way. The third verse of Chaitanya Charitamrita Adilila, first chapter. So he says, Yadadvaitam Brahmopanishadi tadapi asya tanubha. Tanubha means bodily effulgence. That which the Upanishads talk as Advaita Brahma or the Brahman is this personality's bodily effulgence. Ya atma antaryami purusha iti sa asya amsha vibhava. And that which the scriptures talk about as antaryami is his expansions, amsha. Ekamshena stito jagat, as Krishna says. Shadaishwarya purno yaiha bhagavansa swayamayam. And he is non-different from that Shadaishwarya Purna Bhagavan, one who possesses all the six opulences. So whom are you talking about? He says, Na Chaitanya Krishna Jagati Paratattvam Paramiha. There is no understanding of absolute truth higher than the understanding of Shri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he says, what is that absolute truth that Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami is helping us visualize through Chaitanya Charitamrita? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Similarly, there is a Vastu Nirdesh Shloka of Srimad Bhagavatam also. The first verse of Bhagavatam is the Vastu Nirdesh Shloka. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Who is that Vasudev? Janmadhyasya yato anvayadi taratas charteshu abhigyaswarat. That from whom, who is responsible for the creation, maintenance and destruction of this material universe and so on, he describes. So it is Vasudev Krishna who is the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. And is Krishna in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who is the subject matter of Chaitanya Charitamrita? Actually, for all Vaishnava literatures, the subject matter is Krishna only. but some aspect of Krishna. So the subject matter of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is Akila Rasamrita Murti Krishna. Krishna, who is the embodiment of all rasas. Krishna only, but the focus of the book would be how, if you establish a relationship with Krishna in any of these five primary mellows or the seven secondary mellows, you can experience perfect reciprocation. So Krishna as the reciprocator of devotees' love, that is the subject matter of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So therefore, the first verse of 1.1.1, first verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu starts with this, it's this verse. Akila Rasamrita Murti Prashramara Ruchirudda Taraka Pali Kalita Shama Lalito Radha Preyan Vidur Jayati. So I will give a very generic understanding of this, and then we will later go into detail understanding this verse, and we will understand how this verse gives a hint to the subject matter of this book. He says, Krishna, the destroyer of all sin and the bestower of all bliss, the very form of highest bliss filled with all rasas, excels all others in glory. He brings Taraka and Palika under his control by the diffusion of his beauty. He accepts or embraces Shyamala and Lalita as his equals and gives pleasure to Radha by his excellent qualities. This is a very basic translation of this verse. But of course, we will understand this verse in little more detail, and we'll try to understand how this verse gives a hint about the subject matter of this book. But that we will discuss in detail in our next Tuesday. Next Tuesday we will cover little more material. Of course, today we have not covered much. But next Tuesday we won't have so much of introduction and other things. We will directly start with the Vastu Nirdesh Shloka. So I'll, as I told you, those of you who have registered or those who have not registered, you can contact either Vinit Prabhu. I'll share the files with Vinit Prabhu. You can take the PPTs from him or the PDFs, whatever you may find comfortable. I'll share all the four PPTs that I have, and then you can take it from him. Okay, so thank you very much for your patient listening. So we will all meet again next Tuesday, 7 o'clock, we'll start the class. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada ki, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu ki. Yeah.